Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Oh my gosh. Are you writing my biography or what? Okay, here's the story.
Soonmei Chang, also known as May, grew up in Taiwan, raised by parents passionate about social issues. It rubbed off. In the 1960s, she moved abroad for grad school at Yale.
By the way, that's the best way to meet your future spouse, because you're exposed to that same intense atmosphere. I mean, half of the time you're scared to death.
Yale is, in fact, where May met her future spouse. She was sitting in a library studying.
I was taking an economics course, and I had a question.
May was struggling with all these dense theories of economic development, and a guy named Uwe Reinhardt, another grad student, saw her sitting by herself. He came over and offered to help. She explained her question.
And then he said, "You know, I have just the right paper for you, but it's in my place." So he says, "You know, we can go get it."
Uwe was a charmer. They went back to his place.
The ambience was fantastic.
Uwe made May jasmine tea.
And he put on music. It was Beethoven. And then he lit a fire in the fireplace. And we discussed the paper.
They also talked about themselves. Uwe told her about his childhood in post-war Germany, living with his family.
They lost their house and they found a little tool shed in the countryside. So they moved there. It was the mother and grandmother and five little children. There was no hot water, no heat, no electricity. And in the wintertime when the wind blew, the cold came in. You know, they would wake up with a sheet of ice on their chest because their breath would come out and then would freeze into ice that would sit on their chest. But one thing they all had, he and his siblings, was health care.
When we were paupers, my family, we had health insurance like everyone else in Germany. I've never forgotten that.
This is Uwe speaking decades later, in 2009, on Fresh Air with Terry Gross. He's since passed away, but as this interview makes clear, his childhood inspired a lifelong passion, making sure that everyone had access to health care.
And I would like the American people to have what I had and my mother had as a kid. So that is why I care.
That is why I care. Those were his words. That is why I care.
It's also why, in the 1980s, Uwe and May went to Taiwan. They wanted to help build a transformative new healthcare system in May's home country, one that would eventually give millions of Taiwanese people access to healthcare. 25 years later, that Taiwanese system is still in place, and it looks a lot like a pitch we're hearing from presidential candidates here in the United States.
We have got to pass a Medicare for all single-payer system.
I'm with Bernie on Medicare for all.
Medicare for all.
A Medicare for all program.
From the Vox Media Podcast Network, this is The Impact. I'm Jillian Weinberger. This season, we're looking at the big, bold ideas from presidential candidates and seeing how they've played out in other places or at other times. Today, healthcare. Specifically, the healthcare plan that's backed by Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. It's a single-payer plan, or Medicare for All, where everybody gets health insurance from the government. This is a proposal that's revolutionary here in the United States, but Taiwan has had a very similar plan in place for a quarter of a century. So Vox's healthcare reporter, Dylan Scott, went to Taiwan with our producer, Bird Pinkerton. They wanted to figure out how Taiwan built a healthcare system that covers everybody and how that system is working.
Dr. Han Jen-Chang was there at the very beginning as Taiwan's national health insurance took shape. We met him at his office in downtown Taipei.
When did you first realize that you wanted to be involved in medicine?
It's not me, it's my father.
He's a matter-of-fact guy, not prone to dreamy idealism.
My father said, you better be a doctor. You're not a very good businessman. Simple.
Hong Zhen started working in Taiwanese public health in the 1980s, and he could see that a lot of people in his country were struggling to afford health care. There were programs to give health insurance to a few select groups, like farmers and fishermen, but only the workers were covered, not their families. Overall, only about half of the people in Taiwan had health insurance. He says people mostly only sought out care for dramatic problems.
It's a stroke, it's a heart attack, it's an accident, car accident.
And after they got treated,
how do you pay?
It was such a problem that it became the plot point for a bunch of Taiwanese soap operas in the 1980s, like this one.
You know, a beautiful daughter cannot marry who she loves because her father has cancer. She need to pay for that, so she was forced to. These are the classical soap opera.
We need a full workup. This could be serious.
No, I'm okay, and I need every dime to make ends meet.
This is not a Taiwanese soap opera from the 1980s. It's an American soap opera in 2018, The Resident. A lovable contract worker at the hospital gets sick, the staff rush her into an MRI, and then a penny-pinching colleague shows up.
Get her out of that machine.
We're almost finished.
She's uninsured. She can't pay for her treatment.
That's all to say, the problems Taiwan was facing four decades ago should sound kind of familiar in the U.S. today. But for Taiwan, there was a new hope. Right as Hong Zhen was starting his career, the Taiwanese government was going through big democratic changes. They were gearing up for their first direct presidential elections. The people in power knew they needed something bold to get votes. So they decided they were going to build a new health insurance system.
At that time, yes, we welcomed the message, but we are not sure how on earth they are going to do that.
So that's how we got involved.
May and Uva flew over from the United States. They were part of a whole host of foreign experts that Taiwan brought over to advise them on their new healthcare system. All of these advisors and members of the Taiwanese government, they would have long meetings and banquets and debates about different systems. Should they copy Japan, Switzerland, the UK? At the end of each day, May and Uva would have long discussions back at their hotel, preparing for the next meeting.
There was this one critical meeting. It was like a square table with a hollow. So people sat on four sides. And the question was thrown at Uva. What would you recommend that we do about the existing systems?
Uva was his charming self. He didn't say, you must do this or you must do that. He laid out options, he told jokes, but eventually he said...
He said, yeah, if I were Taiwan, I would go single payer.
It didn't quite land.
People scratched their heads. Single payer, what is that?
Uwe and May went back to the hotel. They talked some more.
And he came up with the term single pipe.
In the current system, Uwe said, you had lots and lots of different groups of patients, and there were lots of pipes flowing from these different groups, directing insurance payments to different providers. Single payer would mean one big group of patients and one pipe of payments.
One pipe, out of which flow all the money, i.e. payments to providers.
He had a slide trying to explain why that will work. So he actually drew the pipes.
Then people understood. And the following day, all the media carried this news, you know, foreign expert recommend single pipe for Taiwan.
Eventually, Uva's recommendation became Taiwan's plan. They were going to have single payer, single pipe insurance. And things proceeded in a perfect, orderly way from there.
It's crazy. These are crazy days.
Just kidding. It was chaos. The insurance plan was supposed to roll out in the 2000s, 6 years after it passed. But then, thinking about the upcoming elections, the leader of Taiwan said,
let's implement it in 1995. He moved it up single-handedly by 5 years. So then everybody was scrambling.
Were you mad that they set the timeline so quick?
There's no time to be mad.
Hung Jen was in a lower administrative role at this point, but he saw all the things that needed to happen in just a few short months. They had to make health insurance cards. They had to negotiate with providers and set up claim systems at hospitals. They even had to do the basic stuff, like setting up an office.
The man who became the first director general of the National Health Insurance, he himself was there moving boxes, painting the walls.
The first director general was so overworked that at one point, while he was on the east coast of Taiwan for an event, he checked into his hotel and disappeared. He wasn't at the event. Nobody could find him.
Nobody can find him because he fell asleep. For 18 hours. He was so tired.
The newspapers were full of stories about the scramble to put things together. And meanwhile, the doctors and the pharmacists and the hospitals were worried about their bottom lines. The labor union groups were protesting. They chanted outside legislative buildings and put on skits mocking the country's leadership.
Nobody was optimistic that this system would work. If you look at, let me try to find.
At this point in our conversation, Hung Jen Chang gets an assistant to grab him a chart. Shows the polling for the national health insurance over time. There's a blue line for disapproval and a red one for approval. And we see right at the beginning, before the program is rolled out, approval was low. Like, less than 40% of people approved of the program. But then
people start to receive the benefit.
Almost overnight, millions of people suddenly had health insurance. They could go to the doctor or the hospital without creating a soap opera-style drama about costs. And they liked their new affordable care.
Within 6 months, it's like a miracle.
From the spring of 1995 to the fall of 1995, the little approval line spiked upward, up to almost 60%. And after that, there were dips and spikes, but it climbed steadily. One of those spikes came after Hung Jen Chang took over as the director of the program, because he had an even more ambitious plan.
Let me show you.
One that also requires show and tell.
Not everyone has this kind of map.
Oh, wow.
In a corner of his office, Hung Jen has a beautiful, brightly colored map of Taiwan. It's topographic, which means there are actually green and brown mountains rising up from the page.
We are here.
He shows us Taipei, where we are, in a valley. You can see it here. There's another valley along the west, and there's a small one in the east. And then the rest of the island is just mountain after mountain after mountain, thousands of meters high and tightly packed together. When Hung Jen became the director of Taiwan's National Health Insurance, he thought, there are people living up in those mountains. Small Aboriginal groups scattered throughout. And right now, it's still hard for them to get health care.
So I went to every single mountain villages and offshore islands.
It took him 3 years, but he did it to figure out, how do you make sure that a kid in a remote village can get access to asthma medication, even if a typhoon has just washed out the roads? How do we make sure that highly qualified doctors rotate through these isolated areas?
All right, Dylan, it's 6:10 in the morning. Where are we going?
We're going to a rural hamlet in the mountains on the east coast of Taiwan to visit a rural health clinic.
Bird and I go to see the results of Hung Jen Chang's efforts. We take a short flight from Taipei to the eastern coast, where a flat valley meets steep mountains covered in green trees.
These mountains are no joke.
There, we get on a little tan bus and rattle off towards a small township.
It just goes straight up.
The homes are weather-beaten, with corrugated metal roofs and concrete walls.
Kind of like a single-lane street.
Two black dogs lie in the shade of some crates. One house has parakeets out front in a little white cage. The National Health Insurance has a clinic here. There's a giant wooden wheel carved by local indigenous people on the ceiling and paintings on the walls. They have physicians' rooms, an x-ray room, a small dental office. Across the street, there's a building for elder care. The walls are lined with yarn dolls and pictures made from dry beans. We watch a light aerobics class. Then we go to a small spare town hall where a man in a suit is delivering traditional Chinese medicine.
He took two acupuncture needles and he put them in different parts of her knee.
All of it is covered by National Health Insurance. And then there's Dr. Tian. She's a short woman in her late 50s. Her hair has gone white, so she dyed it bright pink. and she wears an all-black outfit with black ankle boots.
Just for the record, Dr. Chen has a motorcycle helmet that says punk.
She had strong punk rock vibes already, and then she just made it literal.
Dr. Tian rides a moped around this township. She'll drive for hours up into the mountains to give patients care. She's been doing this for decades. We follow her on a visit to a stroke patient's house. There's a step up to the door to keep out the snakes, we're told. And the room is small and boxy. A lot of it is taken up with the man's cot, which has cat print sheets. Dr. Tian takes a blood sugar reading and gives him a thumbs up. A National Health Insurance staffer translates for us.
Yeah, she said, you're good today, behave good today, because you're not crying. That when his wife is not here, he cries.
I love, she jokes with like all of the patients. Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. Just like an old friend to all the patients.
Hung Jen knew it wouldn't be cheap or easy to make sure that people living in remote places had access to dentists and elder care and good doctors making house calls. He laughed a lot during our interview, but talking about this, he was really serious.
To guarantee access is one of the most important goals of any health care system.
When all the rural patients got this coverage, it bumped the little blue line of approval on Hong Jen's graph even higher. It's a trend that's continued. Now, approval is up to 80%.
This is a miracle.
So to put this in context, we looked at a survey of people in other countries. In Germany and Switzerland, about 60% of people thought their system was working well. In the UK and Canada, it was closer to 40%. The US was way down at 20%. All of that is to say, 80% approval is amazing.
Miracle.
But it makes sense. Healthcare in Taiwan is really accessible, and not just for rural people. There are primary care clinics all over Taipei, run by the National Health Insurance. Everyone has an insurance card that makes it really easy to pull up records anywhere. And it's all super cheap for patients. And yet...
Let me ask you, do you think the satisfaction rate over 80%, do you think that's normal?
No, I mean...
But it seems good, right?
Yeah, too good.
Too good.
How do you think it's too good?
After the break, how a healthcare system can be too good.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities. The greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed, on YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jury selection continues this week in a Manhattan courtroom where former President Donald Trump is on trial for falsifying business records. Prospective jurors were asked 42 questions aimed at determining whether they can be fair and impartial, such as, can you be fair and impartial? Have you ever been a Boogaloo boy or in Antifa? And what podcasts do you listen to? Trump's required to be present in the courtroom for this trial that could last until June, and he's been talking to reporters before he goes into the courtroom.
I should be right now in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in many other states, North Carolina, Georgia, campaigning. This is all coming from the Biden White House because the guy can't put two sentences together. He can't campaign. They're using this in order to try and win an election.
Donald J. Trump in court this week on Today Explained, every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Before the break, we were talking about how popular the Taiwanese system is, and it makes sense. People in Taiwan are living longer because of their national health insurance. But this popular and successful program isn't perfect. Right now, it has two big problems. The first problem is one that every healthcare system is dealing with. Healthcare costs keep going up. And on top of that, there's the wild costs of new niche drugs. For example, take the case of Li Yijie.
My interest is seeing movie, and also it's my major.
Yijie is 25. She majored in communications, and she loves Titanic.
It's classic.
Jack.
She especially likes that scene at the end where Rose is on the door and Jack is drowning.
Jack!
She says it hits you right in the feelings, and that's what she majored in communications to do.
Because I think it's very hard you talk about the experience or details of your life. But we can use the movie videos to show the audience the whole story in short time.
That's why she's written song lyrics like the song you're hearing now and a book all about her experiences with a disease called spinal muscular atrophy. We asked her to translate.
Translate? It's a homework for me? Oh my God.
But loosely translated, the song is, like her book, about overcoming obstacles. Because of Yijie's disease, she can't walk. She can't move her limbs much or open her mouth very far. And she has to make decisions like, will she sit in a wheelchair to talk to two reporters, which is maybe more dignified? Or will she, as she decided to do, lie on a bed because it's easier to talk?
Even taking shower, sleeping, eating, I have so many struggles. Yes, so sometimes I feel life is difficult.
A few years ago, Yijie found out about a new drug. It seemed like it could make a real difference. If not for her, then for people in earlier stages of her disease.
But it's super expensive.
The first year is $750,000 US for 1 year for one patient.
Wow. Yes.
It's too expensive for Taiwan's national health insurance to cover. That's hard for Yijie, knowing that the medicine exists, but she can't have it. So she thought, you know what? I wrote a book. I write lyrics. I'll write the government a letter.
After I write the letters, I give the reporter first. It's a smart way to do that because I'm majoring in communication. And I know how to use it. Yeah.
Her letter got attention. She told us that government officials came to her home and the president of Taiwan called her.
But they only say just they will try their best.
There's a committee that meets to discuss the budget for national health insurance. Doctors and hospitals and drug companies and government officials, they all come together to talk about things like covering new drugs. And no matter how compelling and funny and sick Li Yijie is,
we have limited financial resources and limited capability.
This is Dr. So Xia Cheng. He's a researcher who studies healthcare, but he's also served on that budget committee. We went to meet him at his office in National Taiwan University, and he told us that the reason that drugs like Li Yijie's aren't covered right now is that healthcare costs keep rising. The Taiwanese health insurance just can't afford the new staggering costs of some treatments. In fact, he says, the national health insurance system can't necessarily afford the services they're covering right now. This is the second big problem, one that's more specific to Taiwan's healthcare. And it's a problem that So Xia Cheng has been studying since 1995, when national health insurance first passed.
So we published a paper. That's my first paper. The best so far.
In that very first paper, 2 decades ago, So Xia studied the elderly. He wanted to see what happened when you made healthcare cheaper and easier to access. Before the new system,
the annual number of physician visits is about 5-6 times.
But after,
it's jumped to like 12 visit.
Which means the elderly started going to the doctor twice as much once they got healthcare.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know.
I think this is the hospital.
We actually wanted to see this for ourselves. Across the street from Soshia's office, there's a beautiful red brick hospital.
Beautiful parks.
It looks more like a New England college building than a medical facility. Inside, there's a tiled atrium.
Here's registration.
There's a packed registration area where people take little tickets and then wait in chairs for their number to be called.
This really is like a DMV vibe.
We wander around. Every hallway, every waiting room we see, they're all teeming with people.
I mean, I haven't necessarily spent a ton of time in a hospital, but this seems like just bustling, right?
Most of the time, it's very quite crowded.
It was. Yeah.
Lots of patients, yeah. And, well, kind of a little bit like you're taking a tour in the supermarket.
Sosha tells us that under Taiwan's national health insurance, copays are so low and healthcare is so affordable that people use a lot more of it. That's a problem because it drives up costs and because it puts a lot of strain on providers. And when we reached out to Taiwan's doctors union, the doctors they put us in touch with agreed. People come in for every little thing, the doctors told us. It's overwhelming. We're not Marvel superheroes, one of them complained.
Well, personally, I feel that the patients in Taiwan were kind of spoiled by the system.
Sure, people love their healthcare, Socia says. But that's because patients are getting too sweet of a deal.
I believe we are too kind to our patient, which is not a good thing, actually. It's not.
You probably shouldn't run for political office on that message.
Sorry, I will die right away.
Jokes aside, a lot of people are worried. When we talked to the guy who currently runs the National Health Insurance, he told us that things have to change. And the guy who used to run the National Health Insurance also told us that something has to be done. He predicted that if nothing changed, the system would go bankrupt in 10 to 15 years. And our researcher was even less optimistic.
In 2 years, yes.
What?
In 2 years.
In 2 years.
We heard 10 to 15 years.
No.
Wow. So what? Yes. So why is nobody talking about how to prevent that?
Nobody's talking about because it's election year. Who will take the hot potato? No candidate. They're not stupid, right? So they will just pretend, well, I am not the next president yet. I'm going to worry about that later.
But this is where the really high support number might be good after all. Even our pessimistic researcher admits that if patients love a system this much, they'll fight to keep it.
They will adjust. I believe so.
One of the doctors we spoke to said that in the U.S., patients are in hell and the providers, he believes, are in heaven. In Taiwan, he said, the patients are in heaven and the providers are overwhelmed with too many patients coming in. They're in hell. Obviously, this is an oversimplification. But going forward, Taiwan is going to have to find a balance, a way to bring everyone down to earth. That could be done a couple different ways.
Either you are willing to pay more as a premium, or you're willing to pay more as a co-payment.
Taiwan might also have to create more situations like Li Yijie's, where the government tells patients, I'm sorry, for the good of everyone, we just can't cover this treatment. But even if the Taiwanese people end up with a slightly less heavenly version of their healthcare, the fact remains that their system gives millions of people access to excellent, life-saving care. When I first talked to May about the work she and Uwe did in Taiwan, I thought, okay, they went and did this in another country. But they lived here in the U.S. and advocated for healthcare reform here too. So Bert and I asked May, given how well a single-payer, Medicare-for-all type system worked for Taiwan, shouldn't the U.S. do the same thing?
It's just very, very hard to change. Our campaign finance allows the very powerful healthcare lobbying groups to lobby. Our political system is either too corrupt or just say that the American system of governance does not make it likely that a single-payer system could ever see the daylight.
So what do we do?
You know, so we could start by, for example, offering a public option.
Instead of going all the way to Medicare for All in one step, ease into things.
What this means is that the government will offer a public option that is a single payer, and you have that public option run side by side with the privately run insurance plans. Let them compete. Let them compete.
Next time on The Impact, a country that does exactly that. What the public option supported by May and by so many presidential candidates looks like in practice.
This episode was co-reported and produced by Bird Pinkerton. The Impact's editor is Amy Drozdowska. Jared Paul mixed and scored this episode with help from Paul Mounsey. And we had music from Poddington Bear and APM with a theme from Jukebox the Ghost. We couldn't have made this episode without help from Mei Chang and Mei Wang. thanks to Ashley Pan and Andrew Lai. And thanks to Lauren Katz, Marika Ball-Damberg, and Zach Kahn for all their help with marketing and engagement. Thank you always to Sarah Cliff. And finally, many, many, many thanks to Liz Nelson, our editorial director here at Vox. This story was made possible through a grant from the Commonwealth Foundation. It's part of a larger set of stories about healthcare, and you can find all of them linked in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, could you please take a moment and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts? It helps other listeners find the show. And please send comments and questions to impact@vox.com or tweet us at #ImpactPodcast. I'm Jillian Weinberger. Talk to you next week.